This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with Bernie Pinsonat, the esteemed pollster. He'll comment on Governor Jindal's speech at the GOP winter meeting. Governor fanning the flames as he prepares, possibly, for a presidential bid in 2016. Also on the show, more from Bill Maher, who will be in our town, Baton Rouge, this Sunday for an appearance at the Rivers Center. The irreverent Bill Maher has some ideas regarding Governor Jindal. And Gloria Loring, the singer, songwriter, and actress, an amazing career in various venues in the entertainment world, and now she is an author. Her book is Coincidence is God's Way of Remaining Anonymous. All this, now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Last night, Governor Jindal spoke to his GOP brothers and sisters at a major meeting in Charlotte, North Carolina, the Republican National Committee winter meeting. And we will talk about this with Bernie Pinsonat and more. The governor is on the front pages of many newspapers today, including the New York Times, for something totally unrelated to his address last night. Come Sunday, Bill Maher, the irreverent comic who is the former host of Politically Incorrect and now hosts the show Real Time on HBO, and he's done this for a decade, he will be in Baton Rouge at the River Center at 7 o'clock Sunday night. And Bill Maher, he is featured in today's fun section in the Baton Rouge Advocate and a fine story by John Word. He's making what he calls his red state tour as he goes to places like Louisiana, Texas, and Virginia, although Virginia did go to President Obama in the last election. Now, let's give a listen, Kevin, to some of the conversation we had with Bill Maher a few days ago regarding the state of affairs in the national GOP as he sees it, and Governor Jindal.
The Democrats are the miracle party. Because the Republican Party has become the mental patient party. You know, when you have people like Todd Akin and economically people believing in trickle-down economics that has been twice disproven in the last 30 years, I don't know how you can be anything else. So I would say, you know, it wasn't me who changed. They changed.
You say in a recent op-ed piece in the New York Times, you can't run for president if you don't know how old the world is.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of stuff, right.
Well, there are people running, including most likely our governor of Louisiana, Bobby Jindal, who is ramping up for 2016. And he says he believes that the world is not as old as we think.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know what to say about Mr. Jindal. I remember once discussing on the show the exorcism that he performed in college. He once held a girl down and shoved a Bible in her face for hours, you know, and claiming she was screaming. Yes, because you're holding her down and shoving a Bible in her face. I mean, I don't know what to say about people who believe in exorcism in the year in 2012 and don't think that the earth is the age that scientists say it is and believe in the Bible, which I call the old book of Jewish fairy tales. It's an embarrassment to the rest of the world, which embraces science. We are the only country, for example, that doesn't believe global warming is happening. At least half of our politicians don't. They say it's a hoax. Other countries have conservatives and conservative parties, but they don't debate whether global warming exists. They debate how to deal with it.
That's Bill Maher, and as you can hear, he doesn't hold back, and he is sharp with his tongue regarding Republicans. But in the year 2000, when Albert Gore was running against George Bush, Bill Maher, on his show, was supporting Ralph Nader, and he said there was no distinction between Gore and Bush. Now he's criticizing trickle-down, which, of course, that economic mentality was embraced by President Bush. But, in fact, Maher called the two candidates at that time Bore and Gush, saying there was nothing to choose between the two. He's changed his tune, and you got to wonder that maybe in 2000 he might have changed the minds of 537 voters in Florida. And, of course, that's the reason why George Bush became president. So, Kevin Gallagher, it's my contention that Bill Maher is responsible for the election of George Bush in 2000. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757 if you're calling outside the Baton Rouge area. Last night, Charlotte, North Carolina, Governor Jindal takes the stage. And, of course, as we know, some of his speeches in the past have been well-received, and others, and one in particular, was panned mightily when the governor was the rebuttal speaker in 2009 for the first State of the Union address from President Obama. Here's the governor last night in Charlotte.
We've got to stop being the stupid party. And I'm serious. It's time for a new Republican Party that talks like adults. It's time for us to articulate our plans and our visions for America in real terms. It's no secret we had a number of Republicans that damaged the brand this year with offensive and bizarre comments. I'm here to say we've had enough of that. We must quit big. We are not the party of big business, big banks, big Wall Street bailouts, big corporate loopholes, or big anything. We must not be the party that simply protects the well-off so they can keep their toys. We've got to be the party that shows all Americans how they can thrive. We're the party whose ideas will help the middle class and help more folks join the middle class. We must reject identity politics. You know, there's this old notion that ours should be a colorblind society. It is the right one. And we should pursue that idea with vigor. Identity politics is corrosive to the great American melting pot, and we must reject it. We must reject the notion that demography is destiny, the pathetic and simplistic notion that skin pigmentation dictates voter behavior. We must treat all people as individuals rather than as members of special interest groups.
All right, Governor Jindal, last night in Charlotte, North Carolina. So far, the reviews have been better than his speech in 2009, but he was speaking to a friendly audience in Charlotte, North Carolina, and he referred to things like Joe Biden's gun control task force, and he praised Roger Villery, the chair of the Republican Party, in his remarks. Villery was the first person the governor mentioned. Villery is denouncing Vice President Biden's visit to New Orleans tomorrow, saying that the vice president, as he calls him, gun-grabbing Joe, should stay the heck out of the Crescent City, where he is not welcome. Bernie Pinsonat, good morning.
Sounds like politics as usual in Louisiana. And now, of course, Louisiana is much more involved in the national political scene. Normally, we don't get that involved or pay that much attention to it, except at the congressional level, whereas Jindal is in the national spotlight. Whatever he says, mm-hmm. He's running for president.
Well, when Bill Clinton ran for president, and it was a long quest for him as well, and he was the sitting governor of Arkansas, he met frequently with members of the Arkansas media. I know this firsthand. And Governor Jindal is meeting frequently with members of the media outside of our state, but he's not really conversing much about what's going on in the state with people who cover the state. Why is this?
Well, I think it's his agenda. His agenda is right now, obviously, national attention. The attention he gets in Louisiana is sort of scripted, like the tax thing is good for him. The $1.1 billion deficit is not. So Jindal, since he's he can't run again, Jindal's pretty much doing what he wants to do, what's best for him politically, and it doesn't mean that it's bad for the state, but Jindal is absolutely on a mission to get national attention, be in a position to run if it's available, and still he's trying to balance that with Louisiana needs, and when there's something negative going on, like deficits, cutting universities, healthcare problems, Jindal tends to want to change the subject, and now we're talking about taxes versus what are we going to do about mm-hmm. the deficit.
He doesn't like dissent. We know that. And occasionally he lets people know in an extremely personal way how much he doesn't like dissent if you happen to be in the Louisiana legislature. And I understand after your last appearance on this show when you unveiled a poll showing the governor's popularity had dipped, you got a few phone calls.
Timmy, I didn't get a phone call from Timmy. I got some texts, but it was normal stuff. But their contention was the poll wasn't that accurate because it didn't show the same thing that other polls were showing. And as I explained to Timmy Teeple, And I don't think he had a problem with it once you understood. But it was a poll of all voters. It wasn't a sort of a campaign election poll, which is 55% of the voters. But when I'm talking about health care and when I'm talking about cuts to health care programs, it's kind of – I don't think it's proper for me to say this is how Louisiana feels when I only polled 55% of Louisiana.
Well, today's New York Times front page – GOP governors push for a shift from income tax, and it is now known that this was something that was discussed internally in the GOP ranks, and several governors were poised to offer the same plan that Governor Jindal is pushing to repeal the state's personal and corporate income taxes. Now, Governor Jindal, perhaps for political reasons, perhaps for other reasons, he decided to be the first in line. And the story today by Richard Stevenson says Republican governors are moving aggressively to cut personal and corporate income taxes, including proposals that would increase reliance on state sales taxes, setting up ambitious experiments in tax reform that could shape what is possible on a national level. Even as Washington continues to discuss, if not act, on ideas making the federal tax system simpler and more efficient, governors, some with an eye on the next presidential race, are taking advantage of the improving economy and a gradual rebound in revenues to act. And among those mentioned in the story, first and foremost, is Governor Jindal, followed by Governor Dave Heineman of Nebraska and Governor Sam Brownback of Kansas. So the governor's playbook is one that's being used by GOP governors in other parts of the country. How will it play in Louisiana, Bernie Pinsonet?
Well, first of all, Louisiana, by any measurement, whether state or federal, we're a state that has a whole lot of poor people. We have a lot of people that need government assistance. We have a lot of people that go into our hospitals that are poor that do not pay or pay little or next to nothing. Jindal's approach is let's get rid of the income tax and the people will flock to Louisiana. It'll change the dynamics of the state. That may or may not happen, but the tax itself, I don't know the number, but how many people are really affected or benefit from a lower state tax? Maybe 25-30%. I'm not sure. I don't know what the real number is, but I'm saying versus the sales tax and all the other fees or whatever else they're going to call them. So you're doing a balancing act. You can't replace $2-4 billion with sales tax, just sales tax. So how they do that is going to be interesting, but you're also talking about having to get 2/3 vote in the House and Senate, which will be difficult at best. So this saga is just beginning. It's going to be interesting how he pulls this off, but it'll be very difficult.
Now, Treasurer Kennedy contends that because income taxes are in the Constitution, that this would have to go to the voters as a constitutional amendment. That opinion is not shared by Jindal insiders, but could something like this, could it pass the muster of state voters?
Was it their opinion that the retirement stuff they did was constitutional?
Well,
all of this is going to depend upon the final product. And I would say right now, based on the hurdles they face, they're going to probably push this along and see where they can go and what kind of resistance. They're going to be talking about a lot mm-hmm. of different areas. I mean, if you've gone to – I was in a barbershop, and the first thing I heard was they're going to put a fee on haircuts, beauty parlors. I don't know if it's true or not, but they knew it. So as these people find out who's going to pay fees or who's going to pay this, yeah, the resistance will really – so Jindal and him have to be careful. They got to offend as least number of people as possible, and at the same time get this done. And it's a trapeze. You know, it's like a trapeze act or a wire balancing act, and anything else you can think of, it's going to be difficult.
Well, the story today in The Advocate by Joe Guyon, front page, says a Baton Rouge judge, William Morvan, has struck down a 401k-type pension plan that was scheduled to take effect to July 1st for future state employees. His reasoning for doing so is that it was passed in violation of the Constitution, ruled Judge Morvan, because it did not get a 2/3 vote in the legislature. We'll talk with Bernie Pinsonet about what implications this has as the governor now fights it out in court over his pension plan and his voucher plan. 297-5633 is your number. We'll return with more after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Kevin Gallagher is producing. You may reach us also at inksterhow@wrkf.org. Veteran pollster Bernie Pinsonat is with us. He follows the numbers of the electorate in Louisiana and how citizens in our state are weighing the proposals that come from places like the fourth floor at the Capitol, where the governor does not spend a lot of time. He's often on the road, as he was last night in Charlotte, addressing a GOP throng, the Republican National Committee winter meeting in North Carolina. Now, Bernie Pinsonat, the governor and his staff are spending, it would seem, as much time in courtrooms as they are in legislative chambers. What's going on?
Well, I don't think this is the first time this happened to a governor, but they have been very busy passing the so-called reform packages session after session. You know, the opposition is going to take it to court. That's what they do. Judges, you've got the district judges, you've got the appeals court, and then you've got Supreme Court. So whatever is done at the local level, then you the appeal. So the jury's still out on all of the stuff, but they are having some problems at the first level. They're striking out, but as we all know, those things have to make its way through the courts, and how it eventually comes out, nobody knows at this point. It may be when Jindal's gone for some of this stuff is decided.
297-5633. The governor last night said America is not much about government at all. In America, government is one of those things you have to have, but you sure don't want too much of it, kind of like your in-laws. Now, why does a man who has that point of view, why does he spend his entire career in government? If he can't stand government, why doesn't he go out in the private sector and earn a living with the rest of us?
Well, if that's his view and if that's the Republican Party's view, then instead of this being a blip on the radar screen this last election, it'll get worse, because there are a lot of people, as Romney has found out and everyone else knows. Same thing here in Louisiana. There are a lot of people depend on government. There are a lot of, you know,
Well, Romney had standing because he only spent 4 years of his life in government. Governor Jindal has spent his whole career in government.
Well, my point is, I don't know why he's saying that, because one of the reasons Republicans are losing, they fail to acknowledge the fact that in the last election, the majority of people wanted government. They wanted more government. And I don't know what other conclusion you can draw from that. So if Jindal thinks that the majority of people out there they think government is a necessary evil, that's not correct. The majority of the people in this country at this point in time told the Republicans all this talk about cutting government, the deficit, reducing. It didn't sell.
Well, the governor of California, with the eighth largest economy in the world, flies on Southwest Airlines. You think the governor flew Southwest to Charlotte?
I don't know.
The taxpayers have been very, very good to Governor Jindal.
Well, in the survey we did last year, Republicans in Louisiana on his travels and presidents, I've polled this a couple of times, it's 50-50. The only people who really support him on that are really hardcore Republicans. The rest are iffy or don't like it. But Jindal continues to do it because, as far as he's concerned at this point in time, he's not running for reelection. And what are you going to do to him?
All right. Well, here's an idea from Johanna. She says the governor should do what Governor Schwarzenegger, his fellow Republican, did in California and not take a paycheck. If he really is against government and he doesn't like taxpayer money being spent on government things, he could set the example. Just give the money back to the Treasury. What do you think?
Well, Mike Foster did that, and it lasted for 5-6 years. Remember?
He sure did.
And he gave up his salary for a long time. So, it would be a good PR move as far as Jindal willing to do it. I don't know. If y'all could talk to him, it'd be a good question to pose to him.
Well, in his statements last night, the governor said, in our public discourse today, America is pretty much defined by government, by the latest moves that occur in Washington. If you landed from outer space and read the news and watched TV for a week, you would have to conclude that Washington is the hub of America, and what happens in Washington is what drives and dictates the success or failure of America. And he goes into his mantra about smaller government and how that his party is against government, and he believes the Democratic Party is in favor of government. Is that a fair assessment?
The Democratic Party is in favor of government. That's how they win elections. And number two, I don't understand Jindal or anyone else, especially on the Republican side, of just beating up the Republican Party when two short years ago the Republicans had a record-setting number of new House members. They did decently in the Senate, and I don't know of anyone who thinks that 2 years from now the Republicans won't make big gains, because there's been no time in recent memory where the president in his sixth year in power, the Republicans or the Democrats didn't gain seats. So, look, at this point in time, 2 years ago, the Democrats were beating each other up, saying that after they got stomped in the congressional and Senate races that the end is near. We go through this and everybody forgets that 2 years ago the Democrats were in the same position, yet they came back. The Republicans don't have to change the world. The chances are everything leans their way 2 years from now.
What do you think the governor's running for president, Bernie?
Well, if he's not, I don't know what he's doing, spending all the time talking about national problems when we have a lot of problems here. But I think Jindal is trying to balance the fact that he wants to do this, and at the same time, he can't run for president and be unpopular here in Louisiana. So it's a tough balancing act, and that's why not a lot of governors ever wanted to go through the exercise of trying to do both. It's tough.
Who are the governor's confidants? Who advises him? Who does he take his advice from?
Governor Jindal?
Yes.
Well, I wouldn't know. I'm not, you know,
You're on the inside enough that I think you know more than the average citizen does.
Well, Timmy Tipa ran his campaign, and Timmy Tipa went in and became chief of staff. Timmy's on the outside doing whatever he's doing for Jindal, but it's generally related to Jindal. But past Timmy Tipa, I don't know how their pecking order works. So, but Timmy is proven to be very competent. They had a good, great 4 years. He got reelected. So, whether you like Timmy or the governor or not, they've had a successful run so far. You know, but this is the second term. We'll see what happens.
Here's more from the governor last night. He says, for them, the liberals and the national media, real change means supporting abortion on demand without apology, abandoning traditional marriage between one man and one woman, embracing government growth is a key to American success, agreeing to higher taxes every year to pay for government expansion, and endorsing the enlightened policies of European socialism. That's what real change looks like to the New York Times editorial board, says Governor Jindal. But that's crazy talk, he adds. America already has one liberal party. She doesn't need another one. You think President Obama's a liberal?
I don't see how you could not qualify him, but here's my problem with all of that. In spite of all of the name-calling, in spite of all those issues, President Barack Obama got reelected, and none of that stuff hurt him. So I don't. You know, you can talk about that stuff all you want, and that's what Jindal's going to do. You run around talking about stuff that gets you attention with Republicans. Remember, he's not trying to make friends with the Democrats. He's got to go out and do what he has to do to get Republicans to pay attention to him. So that's all he's doing. But all of this talk about the problems with what Republicans need to do is all about all these people starting the campaign, and it's normal rhetoric.
Here's another statement from Governor Jindal last night in Charlotte. He says, we, the Republicans, must compete for every single vote, the 47% and the 53%, and any other combination of numbers that adds up to 100%. President Barack Obama and the Democrats can continue trying to divide America into groups of warring communities with competing interests, but we will have none of it. We're going after every vote as we work to unite all Americans. Now, if the governor were to go north a few miles from his residence, he would be in the heart of Scotlandville. Does he compete for votes in Scotlandville and other places where minorities are present?
Not on your life or my life.
Well, he just said we need to compete for every vote.
Well, look, there's a rhetoric nationally, and then there's the governor back home. The governor back home, when he got elected, was very popular with the majority of the state. After, I'm saying it, I don't know who doesn't know it, General's popularity is suffering in North Louisiana. It's going to suffer when you make the reforms, when you mess with tenure teacher, you start cutting hospitals, cutting universities. You go to North Louisiana, and Jim, who's the biggest employer? School boards, hospitals, local governments. He's not worried about those votes anymore. He's not running. So the bottom line is, Jindal has a lot of problems back here, and I don't think any poll you look at shows him overwhelmingly popular. But that's the things to do the things that pleased his Republican friends. Bottom line is he turned off a lot of Democrats. So yeah, what he's saying is not applicable in my world or his.
Well, yeah, in politics, in fairness to the governor, you reward your friends, and usually you don't reward your enemies. So if that's the case, then by definition, you don't compete for every vote.
Well, you can't, because you have limited resources, and you spend your money where your biggest return is. Democrats don't spend their money and efforts in certain areas of Louisiana. Why would they go spend a lot of money in St. Tammany when they'll be lucky if they get 25 or 30%? So same. Why would Republicans go spend a lot of money in Orleans?
That's not going to happen, is it?
Nope.
No. So we have a division in Louisiana similar to the division in America.
Well, our numbers are similar if you look at it. Louisiana has a lot of poor people, probably right in the, low 40s, mm-hmm. of really poor. Same, and if you look at what Romney said, he used the number 42, 43, and I'm not so sure that's not applicable here, it's pretty close. So, yeah, we have a lot of the same problems.
We also have the highest murder rate in America, and in reviewing the governor's remarks last night, I don't think he mentioned anything about crime in America.
Well, at this point in time, I think he's zeroing in on the things that will please Republicans. And at this point in time, his rhetoric is going to be more related to the national dialogue, which seems to be about the more government or less government, more taxes, less taxes. And that's what he's doing back home, which gives him a little credibility with his national rhetoric on reducing, the income tax and corporate tax in Louisiana. So, yeah, he's following along the path that gets him out of Louisiana and becomes president. And there's nothing wrong with that. There are some people that don't like it.
He says we must stop insulting the intelligence of voters. We need to trust the smarts of the American people. We need to stop dumbing down our ideas, stop reducing everything to mindless slogans and taglines for 30-second ads. We must be willing to provide details in describing our views. On the surface, that would make sense, I think, for a member of either party, but what does he mean specifically for Republicans?
Well, I know what it means politically. I mean, I've written those type of speeches. I've coached candidates to say those things. And what does it really mean? To be honest with you, I don't know. It's just what you say. And
it sounds good, huh?
Yeah, it sounds good. But is it meaningless? And when you apply it, every campaign tries to build a theme. Every campaign has slogans. Every governor or everyone who's run for office is trying to address trying to have sound bites that people pay attention to. Jindal started out running for governor as the NRA and the small government with his little radio ads. What did that have to do eventually with being governor of Louisiana?
Well, John McKithen was elected governor as a segregationist and turned out to be anything but that when he was governor.
Sometimes, and what was his slogan? Won't you help me?
Won't you help me? Help me, yeah. But yesterday, Raymond Strother was on this program and said the governor had no chance to become president of the United States. I think he's underestimating Bobby Jindal. I think Jindal is going to be a force in 2016, and he could get the Republican nomination. And after 8 years of Democratic rule, the country might be ready for a change, Bernie Pinsonette. Will we, 4 years from now, when we're sitting in this studio, will we be talking about President Bobby Jindal?
Well, I'm not going to rule it out. I don't know where Raymond Strother's been, but Jindal has done well nationally. He's out there. He's interviewed on Fox, all these so-called news outlets that presidential candidates go. But the bottom line is, I think 2 years from now, you'll find out a lot. If the country moves back to the right and strengthens the number of Democrats in the House, if the Republicans don't at least gain back the seats they lost last couple times on Republicans and make it close in the Senate, then it really won't bode well for Republicans. Because if they don't do well in the next election, good luck.
297-5633. We'll slide in a few phone calls before we part company with Bernie, and we have Gloria Loring next. Hawk on Corsi notes that the Dead Pelican headline on the Jindal speech says Republican audience didn't really seem to buy it. I don't know how they determine that, but sometimes you can tell, Bernie.
Well, maybe Jindal should talk about specific cuts he would make to the federal budget. When you do that, you get in trouble with this and that. All of these things are topical, and that's what candidates do. But one of the things that the Republicans have got to do, and so does Jindal, tell us where you're going to cut $1 trillion out of the budget. Who are you going to cut? Are you going to cut Social Security? Are you going to cut military? The Republicans are great at saying we need to cut spending, but when it comes to cutting, it's much more difficult, as Jindal has found out, at the state level.
Kevin, you're going to help me on these people who are online, because I'm unable to access the information electronically. So please let me know who's waiting to talk with Bernie, and we'll try to get to a few of you before we part company with the veteran pollster, Dan Downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on with Bernie.
Yes. Do you think that Jindal's presidential campaign could withstand the national scrutiny of the hypocrisy, for example, pretending to be for transparency in government but doing everything to hide documents and stuff from the public?
Well, hypocrisy isn't exclusivity of Jindal. That's pretty much, you know, you look at Jindal's openness, you look at his speech when, in a lot of people's opinions, he looked at the past three governors, and his speech talked about things that you would have thought, I think some of it was reflected on them, maybe in a negative way, but to say that in under Jindal government, it wouldn't be who you know, it would be what you know. And I don't know of anybody they appointed who didn't know them. So a lot of that stuff is campaign stuff. It goes by the wayside. But nationally, he'll receive a lot more scrutiny, period.
Well, thank you, Bernie Pinsonette. Always good to visit with you. And we look forward to your next survey. And we'll be back with Gloria Loring after this 90-second timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and we're joined now by the fabulous Gloria Loring, author, singer, songwriter, actress, a person of many talents, joining us early from her perch in California, and her latest work is a book, Confidence is God's Way of Remaining Anonymous, Reflections on Daytime Dramas and Divine Intervention. Good morning, Gloria Loring.
Hi there, but I know it's early. It's coincidence is God's way.
I said confidence, didn't I?
Yes, you did. But you know what? Other people have done that. So I'm always listening to make sure.
Well, I'm glad you corrected me.
The title is so important. It's a quote by Albert Einstein. And it changed my life. And that's what this book is about, coincidence, where it comes from, how we can use it for our own good, and I used my own stories and stories of other people too, but my own stories primarily to recount my transformation, really, into having trust in life and being able to look for the good in everything.
Some people, Gloria, believe there is no such thing as coincidence.
I know, and that's the fun part of it, because there are several different ways to use that word coincidence. I used to use it with that sort of toss it off and don't pay any attention, like, oh, well, that's a weird coincidence, you know, just kind of let it go. But there's another meaning, which is exemplified by this quote, that it is, coincidence is the activity of our connection in the world, that the supreme and magnificent intelligence and creativity that created everything. I mean, we didn't create our bodies. We didn't create everything around us, the plants, the air, the soil. That was all given to us. And it's all, we know it's all made of the same stuff, too. It's all made of molecules and atoms. And so there is this great connection that goes on. And once we start to look for that, we will see it more and more.
Coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous, from Gloria Loring. How do we put the quote from Albert Einstein into actual use in our lives?
Well, for me, I thought I was alone in the world. I grew up in an alcoholic family. My dad was a good man. He wasn't a bad person at all. But because of the drink, there were things that happened that shouldn't have happened. There were inconsistencies. There was actually, and I recounted, and my healing from it, a inappropriately sexualized experience with my father that affected me profoundly. I was led to exactly what I needed to let go of the past difficulties, the past griefs and fears, through coincidence. Everything I needed, all I had to do was realize, come to understanding, that I am a full-fledged participant in my life. That, in other words, what I do and say and even think has power to take me to the next level. I believe and I know that coincidence will lead us to what we need to know and what we need to grow beyond any sense of limitation we have.
297-5633 if you'd like to visit with the fabulous Gloria Loring, as I said, singer, songwriter, actress, and now an author of a best-selling book, Coincidence is God's Way of Remaining Anonymous. Now, you talk about how you overcame your abuse as a child, and along the way, for somebody who's had the kind of success you've had, Gloria, you've had your share of challenges, haven't you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I don't think anybody can get through life without having some difficulties. I mean, you know, I tell the stories early in the introduction about, at one point I was actually homeless. You know, I don't want to make that a big dramatic thing. I was staying with a friend. My family had moved to California. I had an engagement coming up, my first singing engagement. I was all of 18, all on my own, you know, trying to earn my own living. And my friend's mother said, Gloria, you need to find somewhere else to live, because I'd been there 6 weeks. And I went, what am I going to do? I have nowhere. I have no money. So I called my dad. I borrowed $100. And I wound up staying at the Piggly Wiggly, across the street from the Piggly Wiggly, at a little motel. And I had to put quarters in the air conditioner. And two nights I danced as a go-go girl. But you see, everything I needed got provided so that I could keep going, so I could go to the next step. And I think very often, even though we've had difficult moments, I mean, I went through a divorce, I had a lot of grief and confusion inside of me that would well up at times. You know, when you're an actor, when you're a singer, when you're a supposed star, celebrity person, you know, you put your best face on. It's like when you go to work, you put your best face on. But people don't know what might be happening at home or inside you, the confusion. And so I had all of that started to come up as the years went on, going through my divorce. And I tell the stories of how I raised $1 million for diabetes research, which really is what started this book, because it was the diagnosis of my son Brennan with diabetes, and then being cast on Days of Our Lives a year later, and Brennan had said to me, "Mama, when are my shots going to be over?" And I couldn't say never. So I said to him, "I don't know, honey, but we're working on it," because I wanted to give him some hope. And I had joined the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation with my husband, Alan Thicke, the actor and writer, and he set about right away raising some money and creating a project. But I thought, you know, I don't know how to raise money, and, you know, I wasn't somebody who did those kind of things. I sang, and I was a mom. That was it. And then all of a sudden, here I have this job on Days of Our Lives. Long story short, I notice that people are trading recipes on Days of Our Lives. I create the Days of Our Lives Celebrity Cookbook. Fast forward a year later, I've got everything ready to go to the printer, but I've got no money to pay for the printing. And a little card that said, "Expect a Miracle," mysteriously showed up in my dressing room 24 hours before I met the benefactor who helped pay for the printing. And that cookbook and that little card is framed on my office wall. Still don't know how it wound up in my dressing room. But that cookbook raised $1 million. And it was as if for me now that I look back, you know how we gain perspective as we look back over our lives? It was as if that little card was a clue. Gloria, don't think you're all alone in the world. That you are connected to what you need to know. And that's really what this book is about, how we can use coincidence, how life offers us the next good thing. But we have to be willing to watch for it, notice it when it comes, and use it.
How did you get your break on Days of Our Lives? Was that coincidence?
Well, you know, often we have the things that we need in our lives, one way or another. I had studied acting for 10 years, was never sent out. The agents that I did have didn't send me out on readings. And then finally, I got a new agent who happened to we had a past relationship as kind of management for a little while, and he sent me out. But a really great example of coincidence is my hit song, Friends and Lovers, which was number one all over North America. And I was on Days of Our Lives, and I went into the associate producer, my good friend, Beth, and I was complaining to her. You know how we complain. Even though we got something we wanted, I wanted to be an actress. Now I'm an actress. Now I'm really popular as an actress on Days of Our Lives. And now I'm complaining because I'm saying, oh, you know, I'll never have a hit record because no record company will sign me because they think now I'm just a soap opera actress. And she said, but wait a minute, how could it happen? And this was a really good question, because she turned my mind from how it couldn't happen to making a list of possibility. And I said, well, all right, if I could find a really great song, and if I started singing it on the show, and I sort of outlined how it might happen, the very next day, she brought me a song that had been sent into the show. And sure enough, it was, "What Would You Think If I Told You?" Friends and Lovers.
With Carl Anderson.
And, I mean, there it was. What I needed, what I wanted, already existed in the world. I just needed to shift my mind to how it could happen instead of how it couldn't.
Now, it's apparent, Gloria, that you are a believer in a higher power, and there is a perception by some that Hollywood is a godless pit of decadence. I'm sure you have a different viewpoint.
Well, please, you know, even people who don't, of course, there are lots of people who understand there's an immense power, presence, love, intelligence, creativity. Some people have found a faith path that is beautifully perfect for their hearts. That's great. That's great. Some people keep, they're awaiting further light, let's say that way. But they know there's something that created this universe. I mean, that's sort of what Einstein, I mean, he didn't have a personal aspect of what we call God that he felt he was in relationship to. But he had a tremendous awe of the intelligence and the magnificence of what created this world. And that's what fascinated me about the quote, because I wanted to write a book that was ecumenically inclusive, that if someone had found their particular path, they could say, yeah, these principles, I understand these principles. And if they hadn't found it, and someone said to me, well, what about, you know, people who don't believe in God, does coincidence still work for them? And I like to say, you know, gravity works. You don't have to believe in gravity for it to work. There is a power, a presence, and an intelligence that is present right now in our lives that is connecting us to the next good thing in our lives. We just have to be willing to participate.
Now, you talk about your divorce, and you write about it, and how that was a painful experience.
Yes.
You were married to a famous person, or someone almost as famous as you.
Well, you know, isn't it interesting that if people looked at me from the outside at that time, here I was on Days of Our Lives, and I'm in the press, and, you know, I'm making lots of money, and I got two beautiful boys, and, you know, a celebrity husband, et cetera, et cetera. They would think, oh, she's got it all. But you see, I was bereft inside of me. And the marriage that I had, which was terrific for a long, long time, I learned so much from being married to him. And there came a time when it wasn't right for me to stay there any longer. I needed to grow to a new level. And quite frankly, I wouldn't have pursued the spiritual studies and all of this and writing this book, which has been going on now for 24 years, that since I started this study on this subject and meditation and all of that. I wouldn't have done that if I'd stayed in the marriage. But here I was, and I was so scared. I had so many doubts, so many fears. And this is a story in Chapter 4 of the book. A woman that I met briefly in Lincoln, Nebraska, at the same time that I asked my husband secretly, no one knew, for a divorce, or separation and then divorce, this woman started getting messages from me during her prayer time. And she started to send these messages saying, I hope this isn't presumptuous, but these are for you. This is what I'm being told to send you. And every one of them that would arrive would just touch my heart so deeply. It was as if someone, something, knew my innermost spirit, my doubts, my fears, and was addressing them in the most uplifting and encouraging way. And years later, I found out how she started writing those letters, and that is the most miraculous story. But I'll let people read it in the book, Chapter 4.
Some folks have asked about your son.
Yes, my son is Robin's. Well, both of my sons. I have Rob Brennan is my older son. He's got diabetes. He's doing very well. He's a father and a business owner, and has a wonderful wife. Robin Zick, my R&B rock star son, is also doing very well. He's got a beautiful wife, Paula Patton, the movie star. They've been together for 20 years since they were teenagers. And both of my sons each have a little son of their own. So I get to be Nana.
How is it being in the midst of celebrity in a place like Los Angeles? You must have difficulties, challenges that go amid the glory and the fame. It's not an easy life at times, I'm sure.
Well, no, actually for me it's very different because 17 years ago I moved away to the mountains. I live an hour and a half outside of Los Angeles, up in the mountains. We get snow. It's very quiet. Most of the homes around us are second homes. And this is a wonderful place for long walks with doggies and quiet study and doing interviews on the phone. So I decided I needed a place of refuge, and I didn't want all the traffic and the noise anymore. And I think it was indicative of where my life has become a more interior life, that I do the work and then I take it out to the world. I used to be, from the moment I got up, in I would be ready to run out into the world, you know, and it's just a different life now.
Now, your husband now, you met him in a way that some might view as a coincidence. How did that happen?
Absolutely. I was on a plane, and we were getting ready to leave Dallas to fly back to Los Angeles. There was a flurry at the door, and a man walked on. Last seat available was next to me, and I looked at him, and something went click, like I recognized him, looked familiar. Sat down next to me. We start talking. We found out we knew each other from many, many years before when he was the art director on the Glen Campbell show. And in the middle of the flight, he spills a glass of water on my linen jacket, and he's just mortified. And I'm thinking, what a nice man. And then a little voice in my head, see, intuition is the inner form of coincidence. A little voice in my head says, ah, this is a face you can look at for the rest of your life. And I felt like saying, excuse me, who was that? And anyway, we got off the plane, and he said, I'm so sorry about your jacket. I owe you one. We had exchanged cards, and I said, so call me. He didn't call for 4 days. Turns out he was checking with all his friends. Is she okay? She's not, you know, a druggie or something. And we went out. We went to lunch. We went to dinner, and we got married a year later. And even my all these series of coincidences unfolded, attendant to meeting him, to marrying him, even my wedding ring that we found in Glendale Galleria, the only wedding ring that when they put it on my finger, my heart jumped and I got energy like all through my body and tears in my eyes.
The book is Coincidence is God's Way of Remaining Anonymous from Gloria Loring. Gloria, we got to go, but thank you so much for sharing your story.
Absolutely.
And we'll return Monday. Until then, stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.